Hello, everyone. This is Michael Vandervoort, and I am attending Epic HR this week at the Bellagio in Las Vegas, which is curated by a friend of the show, Mark Stelzner. And I'm doing some quick media hits with some of the vendors and some of the speakers at the conference. So you're going to hear a few different things on this episode. Right now, I'm sitting in the press room with Sarah Vidoni from Business Solvers, and we're going to talk about some open enrollment issues. Hey, Sarah, how are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing great, Michael. How are you?
Great. Thanks for doing this real quick. We're going to jump right into the questions. So the first question that came to mind when I saw you guys, some of the things you offer, is open enrollment is a pain for the daily, kind of the daily grind of part of the HR practitioner's life. So can you start us off by talking about how you guys kind of help address that situation for practitioners and what your solutions offer?
Yeah, definitely. So Business Solver specifically, we are a technology and service company that really helps support employers with that enrollment and eligibility, but also that engagement around the benefits year round. So our technology Benefit Solver is really there to support that open enrollment process. Super critical, super important, right? We know that healthcare costs are only continuing to climb.
Super high all the time, right?
Absolutely. So making sure that employees get in the right fit benefits is critical. That's step one. And that's really table stakes. And so our technology can help support in that process, making sure that we're helping employees select the right
benefits.
Love that
you used the table stakes analogy in Vegas. Perfect.
I didn't even think about that.
I know, yeah.
I haven't even hit the tables yet.
Me either.
Here's the thing.
Excuse me.
But I think what's also really critical is it's become more than that too, right? So open enrollment is sure. It's a really important time when we can capture attention from the employee. But what ultimately is going to drive that cost and trend management for the employer is how are we engaging the employee outside of that open enrollment event so that they're using those benefits in the right way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you probably have seen it walking out on the expo floor. There are a lot of solutions out there, right? There's a lot of point solutions. All of them are great if they're being used effectively by the employee. And so where we can come in and where we have a really great moment with our employers is that we have to capture the employee's attention. They have to come to us for new hire enrollment, open enrollment. Now, how do we use that data and that understanding of the employee to help guide them to those solutions, guide them to those benefits throughout the year? Because we have the data, we have the communication framework, we can be really successful in helping to do that.
Nice. And when we were talking earlier at your booth, where we were able to get these lovely mimosas,
That's right, by the way,
which we're sampling. You mentioned hyper-personalization as another trend. Can you tell us what that is and kind of how that works?
Yeah, so really what it comes down to is as HR professionals, we have to be marketers, right? We have to think about how we communicate and effectively bring forward information to our employees, no different than the marketing arm of your company is trying to get customers within your business. And I think so often we forget that. We forget that there's a science to this and how we can drive that experience. And so helping to use technology, use the data that you have. You have so much data about your employees to target communications to them, whether that's using the enrollment and eligibility, whether that's using demographic data, or even claims. You know, we see a lot of clients nowadays more open and more willing to use claims as part of their communication efforts so that you can really target how you're reaching your employees so you're delivering the most impactful benefits to them.
Great. And in the PR pitch that I got that led to this interview, one of the things that was mentioned is like a hot topic of the month is AI, but you guys used a term that's unique to me anyway, which was empathetic AI. So can you talk about that and how that works in this system?
Absolutely. So AI, right, buzzword of 2023, clearly, and we've had actually AI in our platform since 2017, but I think the difference with empathetic AI is using the AI to serve the employee or to serve our own people so that we can do a better job of taking care of the employee. I'll give you an example. So we actually use AI on our back end of our platform in our call center. So our service reps, our advocates, they don't have to take notes while they're on a call.
Okay, they record.
The AI is fully transcribing it and summarizing it to the case so they can stay wholly focused on the employee and just helping them rather than taking notes and clicking on this and making sure that they're taking care of the process. AI does that for them. So when we talk about empathetic AI, it's thinking about what is the end result that's going to help drive the best experience for the employee? And where can AI help us do a better job of creating that empathetic experience for them?
I love the idea that the AI does the work in the background, which allows the human to be more human with the other person, right? That is like, because everyone's afraid AI is going to, I know we're not going to go down this path, but everyone's afraid AI is going to replace somebody. And your example is like where it augments that person's experience, both actually, which is a really cool outcome if that's the way it actually works.
Exactly. Like it is shocking to me how people just want to assume that AI is this thing that's going to remove jobs and remove human elements. But really, if AI is done right, all it's going to do is enhance how we can be better humans in the work that we're doing and in the way that we're interacting with employees to support them in better using their benefits, their whatever it is that they need to be doing within the organization.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I want to thank you for doing this with me, being a kind of a quick hit version of my podcast, Drive Through HR. To wrap up, why don't you tell people who listen to the episode where they can reach out to Business Solver and, you know, and if you care to share, it's not an obligation, where they might find you like on LinkedIn or whatever, if that's something you're willing to put out there as well.
Absolutely. So Business Solver, we are at businesssolver.com. That is two S's, Business Solver. You can also, of course, find us on LinkedIn, Instagram, X, you name it. And I'm more than happy, Sarah Vidoni, VP of Product Solutions here at Business Solver, would love the reach outs on LinkedIn as well.
Awesome. Well, this is Michael from the Bellagio, and thanks for listening. There will be another clip coming up after this one in the show, so if you want to hear that, please stick around. Thanks. Hello, everyone. This is Michael Vandervoort, and I'm still at the Epic HR Conference in Las Vegas, Nevada at the Bellagio, and I'm doing another quick hit interview for Drive-Thru HR, and I'm really excited to get to talk to one of the keynote speakers here, Tiffany Stevenson from Weight Watchers. Welcome to Drive Through HR. How are you today?
I'm doing well. I'm still really energized from being here this week.
Yeah. It's been a great conference. It's a new event, and they had another version of it that down, but this is a totally kind of rethought event, and it's been interesting. There's been a lot of different things that I've heard about. We won't go into all this because we only have a limited amount of time. But it's been a fun sort of a different format and a bunch of different things. And you gave a great presentation yesterday, which I sat through. I really enjoyed. It was interesting because one time I was a member of Weight Watchers many years ago, and you know, it's kind of like the way you've morphed. And there was a whole bunch of different stories. But you also talked about a lot of HR related things, and so I wanted to kind of get your condensed thoughts from your hour of yesterday about some of the things you talked about. So let's start with. You guys went through a big shift at Weight Watchers, right? You revamped your culture. So let's talk about like a little bit of the challenges and kind of what were the big things you dealt with there?
Yeah. So, you know, just a little bit of backstory on Weight Watchers. The mission that we have is we want to empower people to live healthier and longer. And we do that by building this worldwide community of people connected by healthy habits. That's been the enduring mission that has sort of surrounded us as a 60-year-old brand. We were mostly focused on behavioral solutions, and so most people think about going to the workshops that are located in the countries where we operate, and that's been a big part of our business, I would say, for a lion's share of our time. But what we've seen in the industry is that the industry has really shifted and morphed in so many new ways, and I think as a part of that, new solutions are available to help support people's ability to live healthier and longer, and we want to be a part of those solutions. And so in our in the last year or so, we've made some pretty strategic investments, and one of which being expanding our clinical solutions so that we're able to provide medical solutions, which could be assistance with prescriptions. I think most people commonly think of these as GLP-1s, like the Wegovys, Ozempics of the world. But also other formularies to help support people in their weight loss journey and weight maintenance journey and ultimately weight health, which is what we care about. And so culturally, that was a big shift for us as an organization in helping people really understand the importance of having this breadth of product solutions available to achieve that mission. And so a lot of our very recent cultural work has been really focused on bringing our teams along and inviting them into this future and ultimately achieving the very mission upon which we were founded.
One of the things in your presentation, two things struck me. One was, I love the way you redid your mission and your values, and you came up with what I thought were some really very elegant, very modern, sort of like almost social media, like, you know, you had nice images and they were very short statements. I think one of them was like, move on.
Move together.
Yeah. And it was like a jar of pickles.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm sitting there going, I don't get, well, no, it's, yeah, it's like, yeah. Anyway, so and the other, that was one thing. So I want to talk about that process for a second. And then the other was your founder, which you can tell that little bit of that story as well in a second. But why don't we talk about the culture revamp, or, you know, what, like the value, mission and values first. Like you, they were really thoughtful and well done.
Oh,
so maybe you want to talk about this.
And I want to give all credit to our team who helped us to work on this. But a lot of the work that we did when we recognized, hey, you know, we're making this shift, our mission has remained the same, but our strategy is shifting.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to find a way to help bridge who we've always been to who we are becoming,
mm-hmm.
and making sure that link felt really clear. So we really went after values as a way to do that. And so we started with just some forensic work on our founder, which I'm happy to share a little bit more about in a second. But that work netted out on some pretty interesting values for us that mm-hmm. I think were very much a part of who our founder and how she operated. So one was take big bites,
mm-hmm.
Making sure that we're going after the hard, the impossible things that were like things that are going to drive incredible value. The second is be on point, which is our focus on being science-led, data-driven, high craft-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
The third is move together. So our jar of pickles was that image there, but just making sure that we're one agenda, one team, and we're radically going after
it. And a global team, too,
and a
right?
one global team,
yeah.
Exactly. And then the last one is care fiercely, and it's like care enough about that person and that outcome to do the right thing always.
Yeah. What I love about that the most of, like, just like I said, there was a lot of things that I thought were really well done, is it's so concise and you can deliver your whole statement in like a minute. That's awesome. Most of them are so long, you have to read them, they're wordy. That was really well done. Your founder, one of the first things that struck me is that she built this global business, which she had to get permission from her husband to start the business, right?
So he had to sign.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Not
I don't want to get into dynamics.
No, sorry, it's not literal permission, but it was.
This
was like 50,
60 years
60
ago.
Years ago.
Yeah.
So there's some different values and some
Absolutely.
Different approaches. But tell us a little bit about her story and then kind of how you've threaded it through into the current culture
Absolutely.
And mission.
And I think this was such an important a lesson for us, and one that I'll carry with me, but just the importance of anytime you're making a strategic change as an organization, no matter what it is, the importance of bringing teams along and bringing them on that journey means that you have to be able to kind of bridge it to an umbrella why. And hopefully that why is always your purpose. And so when we think about this purpose of empowering people to live healthier and longer, we only had to go back to our founder's story to realize that this decision that we're making in these last couple years are in direct bridge to the founding of our very company. And so Jean Neidich was a pioneer at the time. One of the things that was so important to her as she founded this company was the ability to create access and making sure that access to weight health solutions was accessible to anyone. And it's not just for the folks who can afford it, but that it was accessible to folks who maybe under ordinary circumstances couldn't go to that expensive doctor on the Far East Side of New York. And so she started this in her apartment and brought people over and shared great advice. So access was an important pillar. A second pillar was around community and making sure that we're creating this safe, supportive, bias-free community where we can hold each other accountable, but keep it real with each other and mm-hmm. be safe to be on this very personal
journey.
I wonder
if she ever said, let's keep it real.
That's the Tiffany version.
No.
The Tiffany embellishment will be like, keep it real.
Yeah. Maybe a bit of different language, but yeah.
Different language, but just so we can be real with one another. And then I think the other thing is that the solutions were science-driven.
Yeah.
So it was important to her that she wasn't putting whatever the fad was at the time, but that it was very science-informed. And when we think about the journey that we're making around expanding the breadth of our solutions, that is the exact same idea. We want to make sure that we're creating access to a broad range of solutions. So we know that behavioral practices always work. They're always a big part of our success. And yet we have a population of folks who need a clinical solution as well mm-hmm. as a companion. And that clinical solution is also a big part of their ability to live healthier and longer. And so this idea of creating access through Weight Watchers is an important part of the journey that we're on. When it comes to this idea of community, having safe communities where you can talk about this and be held accountable is absolutely just a bigger part of our strategy now as it's always been. And then lastly, this idea of it being science-driven is an important part of our solution. And when we think about the advance of GLP-1s and the work that we're seeing in terms of their success, we know that this is science-backed information. And so it is our duty to make sure that we're putting that information out so that our members can achieve this mission. And so we really spend a lot of time stitching these core principles from GeneKnightage to sort of what we're doing today to tell that story.
And that's we talked in a little bit of our prep for this interview. We talked about, I've worked for a couple companies, not to make it about me, but they had very strong founder values and the vision of the founders still exists, you know, in the case of one company over 100 years later,
wow.
which is amazing.
Yeah.
And the fact that that person had like such a clear vision of yeah. business and how he wanted to do, but also that the value stick, but you have to morph how you present your values.
Right.
And you, in your case, you're also kind of morphing your very business into a new model, right?
That's
from
right.
I don't know what you would call the old Weight Watchers, like a support group into a healthcare company.
Yeah. Yeah.
You talk about the big bold big bites. That's
yeah.
that's a huge swing.
Absolutely.
And in doing all this, as you did the work, you talked about kind of having a system around your culture, which I hadn't heard it described that way so much. So can you expand on that a little bit?
Absolutely. I think one of the things that we are thinking about as we make this shift, and we're calling it to sort of weight care, and this idea of weight health, which is the degree to which sort of weight has an association with your quality of life. We want to make sure that we're offering solutions that support that. And from a cultural perspective, we really think about the systems that help to engineer a change like that. And so one of the things I heard this quote, and it has stuck with me for a long time, which is that a culture is what it does.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of that being that the systems that you create, and I think in the people space, we are very empowered with our leadership team and our CEO to really think about the kind of culture that we're trying to engineer that drives that. So if I go back to the idea of values, which is something that we talked about, we really have been spending time of like not only just making those values and that shared language just understood, but then how do you make sure that systematically you're driving clear behaviors? And so we've updated our global career framework as an example, and now those values are a part of that framework from an individual contributor all the way up to the CEO, so there's shared understanding of those, and those get woven into things that we know commonly, like our performance management process, our promotion process, our hiring process, but then it also is used to inform how we make decisions, and
mm-hmm.
so we can link to some very big decisions that we've made, one of which being like talking about the fact that we had to acknowledge sort of some of the work that has informed our evolution by saying, man, we weren't servicing everyone in their weight health journey, and we want to acknowledge that. And so our CEO, Seema Sistani, has literally publicly talked about that, and we can tie that to our value of care fiercely. Again, it's the idea if we know that there's something that we need to do or say, we're going to do or say it because it's the right thing to do. And so we can link business decisions to our values, which is, I think, another way of informing systems.
Yeah, that's awesome. I want to thank you for doing this. I think we're going to go ahead and wrap up. So so first of all, great conversation. I have
thank
two
you.
Final quick questions.
Of course.
Just for those who, like me, didn't really know much. I mean, like I know Weight Watchers as a brand, but
yeah.
I don't really know much about like the structure or
yeah.
number. So like how many employees were
yeah.
you know, you're in how many countries? Can you just give us like a thumbnail of the company?
Yeah, absolutely. So we currently have about 5,000 employees.
Yep.
They're spread out in 10 plus countries.
Mm-hmm.
Our global headquarters is based in New York, but we are a distributed work team. So people pretty much work from everywhere, which has been a fantastic part of this journey in a great way. Again, thinking about values, how do you move together when you're making a strategic
yeah.
shift?
And especially yeah. on our goal and delivering meetings in all kinds of different cities
yeah.
and all the sorts of things that you do. It's a two-pronged question. Final thoughts, and if people wanted to reach out, what would be the best way for them to find you if you're willing to give that contact?
Absolutely. So LinkedIn is sort of the way I, you know, have as many folks do business. But yeah, definitely I'm reachable. I would love to best practice share all of those things. So that would probably be the best way to track me down. If there's any interest in sort of thinking about this from either direction, both as a member, you can obviously go on our website. But I think the other thing I would share, especially if this audience is around people practitioners, the one thing that I would say is that thinking about weight care as a part of your overall benefit solution, we have Weight Watchers for Business. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is an important thing as we think about just spectrum of care that we provide for our employees. Mm-hmm. Weight health is health. And I think that that is an important conversation that we know it has so many indications of things around absenteeism, issues around comorbidities that end up driving up the cost of healthcare. We want to be that partner, and we want to think about ways that we can help businesses be able to solve for that. So if there's any interest in that, please, please, please get in touch with me or our Weight Watchers for Business.
We'll do bonus question, and this just occurred to me, and I'm surprised I didn't think of it when we were prepping. I'm an admin person in a big Facebook HR group called Evil HR Lady, and we were having
Evil HR Lady.
Cool. Yeah. So her Suzanne Lucas. Yeah. So she's great. I'm one of the mods and her moderators in her channel. Not to pitch that, but it's always great to give her a plug. We were having a private chat of some of the mods about trying to get access to GLP-1s and how frustrated one of my co-moderators was in her, because she's not diabetic, right?
Yeah.
I think I missed this. They can do that through Weight Watchers for Business, right? That's the part of the clinical care?
Yeah, and so you can do that as a member. Mm-hmm. So any member can join Weight Watchers, and as a part of that process, if they are eligible, we can support that member with helping with prescriptions.
Nice.
And so I just want to make sure that that's a clear part of sort of how people understand the model. But then as a business, so as an employer, when you're thinking about the benefits that you want to provide for your employees, we have Weight Watchers for Business, which helps to think about behavioral and clinical pathways and solutions for your employees. And so we can be the one-stop shop for weight health care.
Very cool.
In a similar way that, you know, people are going after menopause care, IVF care. We feel like this one is an important one that oftentimes is overlooked, but has so many tentacles to someone's overall health and well-being.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing that, because like I didn't put that together even as we were, like I said, as we were talking.
Yeah.
Anyway, this has been Michael Vandervoort at Epic HR. This is probably going to be my last interview. This was Tiffany Stevenson from Weight Watchers, and we're going to go ahead and sign off. Thanks for doing it again,
Thank
Tiffany.
Thank you. Such a treat. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Let's see if I can.